Interstate Batteries has been a proud supporter of the Sportsman's Nation since day one. They offer just about every battery under the sun, from car and truck batteries to batteries for your trail cameras and rangefinders. Select retail locations even offer cell phone repair and cracked screen repair. Find a local retail location at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Welcome back to another episode of the Woodsman Podcast, where we'll talk everything Pennsylvania outdoors. If you enjoy deer hunting, fishing, trapping, or just being outside, this podcast is for you. Our goal is to showcase the vast opportunity that the Pennsylvania woodsman can experience. We hope this inspires you to get out and enjoy God's creation in the Keystone State. Welcome back to another episode of the Woodsman Podcast. I think this is episode number 7. I am sitting here at the comfy desk chair I have in my house. Kid is in bed. Wife is in bed. All is quiet in the house. And I'm sipping the cool summer beverage of H2O brought to you by Creation. So thank you very much for that. I'm tuning in here with Devon. Devon's been working hard, busy at the bow shop. Is that right?
Yeah. That is right. And that's, I guess, part of the reason we couldn't meet up tonight. It's been getting pretty crazy here, as you would imagine for this time of year. Everybody's finally starting to, some of us just think about it all the time. We're kind of weird that way. There's other people that are weird that they only think about it this time of year.
what is your busiest time as a bow shop owner? Is it right now, like all through season, or?
So it'll keep getting busier, I would say, up until the season starts. I would say probably August, September is our absolute peak. Normally, and you can mark us down pretty much every year, the week that license go on sale in June, it really starts picking up, and then just kind of gradually from there. But we actually had a really busy spring for us. April, May was quite a bit busier than normal, and then it did actually tail off a little bit in June. By all appearances, it's on now.
So the work that you're getting right now, are people buying new equipment, or people just getting the stuff they have worked on and just kind of adding to equipment? Like, what are you seeing right now mostly?
Some of both, really. If tonight, for example, I think I sold 3 bows and got like 6 into fix. So, it's a mixture. A lot of your hardcore guys, their buying is about done as far as big items. You know, right. They're now at home shooting and getting ready for the season. I don't want to make anybody feel bad that hasn't started yet, but there will be a lot of guys that'll still buy here in August. And I would say, as far as bows go, that will kind of tail off, you know, in September, just like you would imagine. But the crossbows will hold strong till probably, probably till November, really.
So please, anybody that listens to this, please tell them, is there a specific time frame? Like if somebody's going to say they need a new string, what is the time frame as a bow shop owner that you say, this is when your bow should be in by so I can get this done and off to you so you can practice and tune it in?
Yeah, yesterday. in all seriousness, it actually makes it really handy when guys plan ahead. For one, it helps us spread our workload out a bit. I'm kind of almost a one-man show here, not quite anymore, but almost. And so when everybody comes in at once, you know, a month before the season and needs this, that, or the other thing done, it just makes it unhandy for everybody. If you're looking to, you know, get a new string put on your bow or something else like that, that, you know, the end of the season last year, you knew you were going to need it done for this year, bring it in, you know, early spring. It just makes it so much nicer for us that, you know, not everything comes in at once, but, you know, some of that just always will be the case and we'll deal with it. But I would say that's if you want to help us out at all, go ahead and plan ahead a little more.
Help you out and help yourself out in a sense, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
So as a bow shop owner, you find time to be shooting yourself and getting ready?
You know what? Yesterday I took my bow home for the first time. I shouldn't say that. No, last weekend I had it home, and shot a little bit, but yesterday I took it home and actually shot some broadheads a little bit for the first time. I try to shoot every day, just a couple arrows here in the range. But that's not really the same as taking it outside and stretching it out beyond 20 yards.
Now, so, were you able to join in your groundhog roundup?
I donated, but I actually did not get out at all. I was pretty pathetic. We were on vacation last weekend for a couple of days, and yeah, I got back from that and just had too much stuff here to catch up on. So I forfeited that one, but yeah, there was quite a few guys that did get out.
Hey, family comes first, and that's what we're all about here.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So you've been able to get a couple arrows in, so you feeling like you're pretty ready?
No, I'm not ready, but in all reality, I'm not going to have a ton of time to shoot anymore. I would definitely need to, do some more shooting, but no, it felt good. I don't shoot long in the woods. 30 yards is pretty much my max. So to me, you know, shooting 20 in here at the range is really not that far out of what I'm going to be doing in the woods. I mean, I can go home and shoot 30 and that's not a whole lot of difference. I do enjoy shooting further than that. It's just, with my time being limited, that's the part that I don't get to do as much. Just, you know, go back to 70 yards and shoot just for fun. I don't have as much time to do that anymore as I did at one point.
Well, how many times have you actually been in a hunting situation, archery, that you could say that you could have made a long shot on a deer?
Yeah, I mean, let's face it, we all could have pushed one. You know how it is. Mm-hmm. You see deer at 70 yards all the time. I just for myself can't imagine ever shooting that far. I mean, I do it at the target and, you know, fairly proficient at it, but I don't know. For me, it's just a totally different ballgame when you're in the woods.
It's a different ballgame when you're in the woods. It's a different ballgame when it's a live target.
Yep.
You know, I shot a lot. I used to shoot a little bit of target, indoor target. I shot a little bit outdoor 3D kind of deal. And, I'm by no means gonna say that I'm a fantastic shot, but I mean, I practice out to 100 yards. My goal was always, you know, if I had a distance in mind of what I wanted to hunt at and shoot at hunting, I wanted to be able to put in consistent groups, double the distance.
Yeah.
So that was always my logic there. So, you know, on paper, that means, you know, I'd be shooting at 50 yards. I've never shot at a deer at 50 yards. I'm not going to say I haven't had opportunities. I've passed some opportunities. I just haven't had that situation where I need to. You know, last year, my buck I killed was 20 yards. I mean, that's just, I try to set it up that that's what I'm shooting for.
Yep.
This year, I don't know how far I'm going to be shooting or what my shooting's going to be like. I am still struggling. So I had a terrible injury when I was in high school playing football, and I'm now really struggling and dealing with the repercussions of that. It's killed me to the point where it hurt to shoot my bow the past few weeks.
I see.
It was hurting to pull it up, and you know, I shoot a back tension release. So
yep.
I tend to lean, I'm not going to say hard, but I do lean on it a little bit. And I really noticed, man, that killed my shoulders, and I'm trying to heal and so I can shoot my bow. But I have a 60-pound bow and I dumped my poundage down to about 52.
Yeah. Okay.
And I was shooting with that, and if it doesn't get any better, there's a good chance I'm going to be shooting, you know, low 50s this year in hunting season.
Well, you know, they make crossbows for that kind of thing too.
Hey, I'm not anti-crossbows, just not my style.
I just had to say that.
Absolutely. You know,
I
went out with people who shot deer with a crossbow, and I've been around them. I've never shot one. It just doesn't do anything for me. I mean, the fact that crossbows get other people out are great. I mean, hey, it's good business for you too. It's definitely not my style. So anyway, yeah, I am definitely struggling with my back. It's definitely getting better, but I'm hoping to start flinging a couple more arrows. I haven't shot past 20 yards. I was just doing blank bail just to try to, you know, shooting 3 feet away, trying to build muscle, but it's just, it's been a slow progression. I'm way behind compared to where I normally am. This is July 27th. I'm a little bit further behind than I like.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully that, straightened itself out for you.
Yeah. We'll get there. So have you, tell me a little bit about your camera strategies. And, you know, I know you put a pile of cameras out here recently, and I think you pulled a couple. What are you seeing here lately?
Yeah, I did. I still don't have quite all of them out. I have too many spots, I guess, but,
no such thing.
I guess it depends how you look at it. I would say for me, it has been kind of slow. There's some I haven't checked real recently, so maybe that's not a real fair statement, but I do have some cell cameras out. I think, I don't know, maybe five or six. So I get, you know, info from them whenever they're taking a picture. But, yeah, there's a couple bucks that I was looking for that, well, two or three of them for sure I've caught back up with, or I've gotten, you know, a couple pictures of to at least know that they're still alive. On a couple of different spots. There's still a couple that I am looking for that I haven't seen yet. I don't know, you know, it's still early. Still there. You know, what you're seeing now isn't never real. I try not to get too excited about it because we all know it changes quite a bit, but it is interesting to see what's out there. There's a couple good ones. One thing I have noticed, and it'll be interesting to see what you think about this, or I haven't really talked to a lot of other people about it, but I wonder if our hard winter last year affected antler growth at all, because I mentioned there was a couple bucks I was wanting to catch up with, and I have, and it really seems like they haven't really put much on since last year. And I know that does vary from deer to deer, but, I wonder if the hard winter didn't play something into that a little bit as far as antler growth. What do you think about that?
Absolutely. It's going to be different everywhere across the whitetail's home range, especially based on habitat. The higher the quality habitat, the more available food supply, the better those deer are going to be off. But there's no doubt that when you have extreme harsh conditions for a long period of time, those deer are not able to plateau, so to speak, from their growth potential. They're going to dip down and go into shock mode, basically trying to reserve body heat and energy. And there's a lot of recovery from that. One of the QDMA studies I read was that deer, bucks that have rutted 3.5 years and older can lose up to 30 to 35% of their total body weight. So, I mean, okay, you think about that going into November, and then we get in through December. Now they're in recovery mode. So if you're hunting a place where there's great habitat, maybe they can recover and have the food supply to go through. But I mean, you know, I speak just for myself where we're at. We have a food plot program in place, but it's pretty much a contiguous forest of very minimal improvements, except for the property that we're on, and the crop fields around us are gone. Everything was covered in snow for is a month stretching it, Devon?
No, I think it was longer than that, actually. Wasn't it basically from, you know, beginning of February till mid to it was at least mid-March, at least some places, till they got melted off.
I don't know. It just felt like an eternity. That's all I remember. Yeah,
that's for sure. Did.
So, I mean, you think about that amount of time, those deer are not moving far. And if you've got all your browse is consumed, your food plots are consumed, if you've got nothing, that's going to affect antler growth. You know, it's going to affect, it actually affects fawns. Believe it or not, there's been studies that show that a doe will abort a fetus. In those situations,
okay. I see.
don't ask me how they can do that in that study. I think that's beyond me, but that was a study that I read. So absolutely, I think it having an effect on antler growth.
Yeah. What are you seeing?
Well, that's a sad subject. So for one of the properties we're at, we have not seen anything. This is one of the first years in a long time where we don't have anything that wows us. There's a really nice buck that we're going to guess is a 4-year-old. He's really nice, but he's not any bigger than he was last year. Kind of the same thing what you saw. There's a couple other buck that we're going to guess that they're 4.5, maybe 5. Like, they're really nice buck, but you know, they're not high scoring deer. Not that that makes a makes a huge difference as far as trophy quality in my eyes, but it's just something different than I've been used to for the past 5 years, because the past 5 years we've had our eyes on a deer that's we know has scored 140 or better. Mm-hmm. So it's just a different realm. I do have eyes on one deer in my at another spot that is probably going to be pushing that 130 mark. It's a nice deer. And I've not got a picture of him, but I laid eyes on him in the bean field nearby. And I just took a walk. I'd been cyber scouting on police for a while and finally put boots to the ground this past weekend with one of my hunting buddies. And we put a couple cameras out, scouted a couple areas, and I'm anxious to see what shows up. It's a new spot for us, and I'm anxious to see what happens.
Yeah, cool.
So, but right now what I've been really geared toward is trying to prepare for food plots.
Yep. Same here.
So I was busy spraying last week and got things cleaned up. We had done a little tinkering this year, had some positive things happen, had some negative things happen. But ended up spraying fields clean with a quart per acre of Roundup and a pint per acre of 2,4-D, and planning to go in and no-till food plots into that.
Okay. Yep.
How about you? How's the corn look?
The corn looks real good. So normally what we do is, and I think we might have talked about this in our the podcast we did about the spring food plots, but we do a lot of corn. And then what we'll do is come back in about this time, anything that's been, you know, has had the heart eaten out of it or isn't putting an ear on, basically end rows, edges. And there's a couple other plots we had left open in the spring as well. We'll bush hog them down, kill them, whatever. And, usually I like to shoot for first week in August, which is coming right up here. My dad set it out to the farm tomorrow to do that, to burn down. And, hopefully next week we can get out there and get some seed in the ground. To answer your question, the corn is actually looking really nice. We had, when we were dry here earlier on this spring, May, June, they were getting some rains out there that we did not. And so they grew real well, out the farm there while we were pretty dry here. And, corn looks great. I think it's going to be a real good crop. Be interesting to see, you know, what it does as far as ears, but it's looking like it's going to be pretty nice.
That's fantastic to hear. And for those of you who are listening to this and don't know what we're referring to, you know, we've done a podcast on spring food plots, and you should really check it out, because we went into some slightly unorthodox ideas and just some overall planning, from herbicide management to fertility management. And I think it's really important, because you went through when you planted, you would have burned down. Did you just use Roundup, or did you use any residual herbicide, Devon?
Pretty much just Roundup. Yeah, I believe.
Okay. Yep. So did you guys end up doing just two passes of Roundup in that field to clean it up, or what did you do?
We did. Yeah. I can't even remember when it was. It was in June sometime. Dad went through it, and, it's really clean now. It's nice.
Excellent. And you would have put some nitrogen on that as well?
We did. Yep.
Okay. So what did you do then? Just go and broadcast urea?
Yeah. Yep. It was a pelletized stuff.
Okay.
Works a little better for what we got, and just throw it in a spinner spreader or whatever and apply it that way.
I think that's most of us. So would you say that corn is your base out there?
It has for years past. Just it works well for us. You don't have as much summer browse pressure on corn typically as you would beans, and right. Our plots are big enough that we can do corn. I will say this, and we said this before, but if you just got a quarter acre plot, don't bother with corn. It's not that don't produce enough to tie up that quarter acre.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah. So, I mean, we have probably close to 8 acres of it, I believe.
Okay.
So that's, you start doing the math, that's quite a few bushels of corn there. And absolutely. What we'll also do as well, so this year, for whatever reason, I said it looks real nice, and it does. It is pretty thin, like thinner than we would have probably tried to plant it. I think we had some germination problems. We had used a bag or two of leftover seed from last year. And but what I think it's going to lend itself well to is going back through it and just overseeding. So probably what we'll do is either put wheat or rye in it. We'll just go through it with a hand spinner spreader. And I believe that's going to work better this year than it has in years past, just because the corn is thinner. Mm-hmm. Typically that seed will sit there until the corn starts drying down and it starts getting light in there.
Exactly.
And that has worked really well for us. So we're basically double cropping. If you couldn't do that, I still think it'd be a toss up whether corn would be worth it or not. But if you can get, something else growing in between the rows there, it's a win-win in my opinion. You got grain and green in the same field. It's hard to beat.
Yeah. So basically what you're describing there is kind of what we talked about early on in a planting sense. I talked about 60-inch corn, being able to manage that with an ATV and yep. having green grow in between. And I've seen good success with that from an agronomic standpoint. People who are trying to be initiative with soil health and have a cover crop growing, or companion crop growing with that corn. And I won't get on a tangent, but that's a great benefit, but there's no doubt about it. I'm anxious to see your results, how you have a green with a grain and how that affects your hunting and your deer movement.
Yeah. Yeah. It's worked well so far. Like some years when you're overseeding, when you're not putting the seed in the soil at all, it's a lot more dependent on your rain. So some years, obviously, it works better than others. But we have had some really good stands of small grain in between those corn rows already. And always what you hope for.
So when you're going on, you said a small grain being wheat or rye, are you doing just a flat rate of, say, 2 bushels? Or how are you handling that?
That's a good question. For one, it's really hard to get it on, cause you're either walking between the rows or driving between the rows. So basically I'm not even sure how to answer that question. It's not necessarily down to science for sure. Basically however it works the best. You don't want to get it too thick, but at the same time, you're going, anytime you overseed like that, you're going to have seed that just nothing happens to.
Exactly.
You lose a lot of seed. I shouldn't say a lot, but you lose some seed by broadcasting like that. So you got to, we usually tend to err to the heavy side.
Exactly. And I've seen the exact same thing. I've seen cases where broadcasting with plenty of rain is just absolutely fantastic, to the point where you wouldn't even know that it was thrown on top of the seed. But then I've also, you've experienced the same thing where you can have some loss with a broadcast rate. So, the one thing I've been leaning towards, and I'll probably talk about this with my food plot strategy a little bit, but we've been layering it. So, we'll do our initial planting of the mix that we're going to use this year, come back about 2 weeks later, layer about 108 pounds of rye per acre, which is just a little less than 2 bushels. So just figure I'm putting 2 bushels on and broadcasting that. And, I say about how do you figure how much? Well, I just know how big the food plots are. I know how much rye I want to have. And then pretty much all it comes down to is I use an Earthway seeder, fill that baby up, open the nozzle as far as it goes and crank it fast and walk fast. And I mean, that's, there's no exact science to it, but I mean, I just have a measured amount of seed that I'm going over top of, and we'll put that 100 pounds on and then come back in another 2 weeks. So let's say we're planting, you know, I'm planning, if weather holds out and everything holds out, I'm planning on doing some planting of our first crop this weekend. So that might mean I might wait till Labor Day and layer that rye or wheat over top of it, and maybe go in September 15th, another 2 weeks later, do the same thing. And the reason for that is, number one, it's going to fill in any gaps where maybe you had poor germination, or, you know, seed washed from a heavy rain or something, so there was a bare spot. It'll fill in those gaps. But number two, you've got different maturities of crop. And I think we all know, if we've had any experience with food plots, that there's nothing that beats lush, young, tender growth to it as far as attraction. Yep. You know, you've grown soybeans as a farmer, and you know that when they're in those first trifoliate stages, those first vegetative stages, they're extremely tasty and deer love them.
Yep.
So that's kind of our thought process of trying to, you know, two birds with one stone, you know, get enough tonnage and thicken it. Sure. You know, it's a higher than normal rate of small grain, you know, compared to what you'd hear a farmer, you know, when you were dairy farming. I mean, what was the rate that you'd plant rye and triticale for silage?
You know what? I'm not even sure on that.
Probably 2-3 bushel, I'm guessing.
Probably something like that.
So, I mean, I'm talking about like 4 bushel. We're a little bit higher than you would be normal hearing, but it's layered for a food plot. So, I mean, there's you're using some concepts for food plotting that are agronomic, but you're changing some things is kind of the way I'm looking at it.
Yeah. And that's one of the benefits we have of, well, you're not far from your food plots. And between me or my dad, we get out there, you know, every other week or so. So it's not like, you know, you're driving upstate one time and in, you know, August planting your plots and you're not going to be back till hunting season. That's one luxury we have of being able to go back 2 or 3 times and do like what you just said there. That's definitely definitely a benefit for sure. Yep.
Certainly. I like
that. Yeah.
So, so you're going to be broadcasting into your corn. You said you're going to be broadcasting a cereal grain. Yep. Are you going to be planting any other fall food plots this year?
Yeah, we'll probably do some brassicas. It's going to sort of depend. We have 3 clover plots right now, and I'm kind of debating which one of the 3 I'm going to terminate and put brassicas in, or if we're just going to let those go. We do have another plot that we had pretty much just killed off this spring, and we actually planted some rye in it this spring just so it would have something in. It was some new ground we had just pushed off, so that there will get burned down here this week, and that'll get brassicas for sure. But there again, it's just going to be some corners here or there. Probably we don't really have a designated brassica plot per se, unless we, like I said, kill off one of those clover plots. So yeah, this year we won't probably have as many brassicas as other years. So last year, believe it or not, we had a lot of brassicas that did really well. And come spring, there was still, I bet we had the one big field, it was about 2 acres. I bet there was half of those brassicas were still there come March. They never go to waste. They go into the soil and help things out. But it's not like, I think we actually had more than the deer could use last year. So yeah, with just the way things are working out, we're not going to have quite that many this year, I don't believe. But yeah, I usually do try to have some somewhere, because I do like them for late season.
I think it's interesting, that brassica conversation.
Yep.
You know, so many times you'll hear people that'll say, you know, turnips or radishes or whatever, that's the best food plot. That's the best food plot. And I'm sure you've had cases. I mean, you sort of experienced it, and I've had other people tell me that, you know, they didn't touch those brassicas. I planted them and they didn't touch them.
Yep.
I don't know that I quite have that one figured out. The only thing that I know is they're going to eat what's the best available food source at that time.
Yeah, for sure. So are you going to be, Are you going to be doing any brassicas?
Yeah. So, this is year two for doing the same food plot system that, I'm not going to claim any credit for it. We took this from another very advanced food plotter, whitetail hunting consultant by the name of Jeff Sturgis. If anybody is listening to this and knows that name, he has some pretty good concepts, but his food plot concepts in the fall have been, planning the same thing in every food plot. And I'll get into why his reasoning is for that. And, splitting the plots in half, half of that plot is peas as a base with a slight mixture of soybeans into that and oats. Are basically going as a nurse crop. So in one half, you've got this side of, you know, legumes that are kind of, I think he calls it his sweet side. And the other half is straight brassicas. The reason for that is trying to stagger early, mid, and late season green food sources, and having them at the same location is going to keep that movement consistent. You know, you're not going to have one food source maturing at one time of year, going unpalatable and switching to another area of your farm where, you know, you've got beans over here, then they mature, then the other end of the farm, the brassicas are the hot spot. So it's keeping the movement to that food source consistent. Sure. And the last part of the food plot would be, we'll go in, as I said earlier, and layer rye, 100 pounds per acre. And our plan is to do that just on the legume side. The logic behind that, and it's not something I necessarily agree with, but we're gonna try it this year. Last year, our food plots were a major fail because we had a major drought. Yep. So we ended up salvaging our plots with tillage radish and rye. I mean, that was our food plots, with tillage radish and rye last year, and it worked. But so year two, this is basically year one of seeing how the system works. But the theory is, if you put rye and a brassica together, that they're going to compete with each other. Okay. And there's truth to that. If you are trying to maximize potential of one, they're going to compete with the other. And that is true. However, if you want brassicas to be your base and you give them a head start and then come back and layer rye in between, the brassica, if you get it to the correct growth stage, is going to choke out the rye for a duration of time. Then if the deer come through and annihilate that brassica crop, what's left, rye underneath, that will take off. So you have something growing all the time and it stays a good food source. So I kind of went on a tangent there, but so we're going to be planting on one half oats, beans and peas. And the other half is going to be a mixture of, I think it's two different types of turnips, a radish, a kale. I don't know what all's in it. It's a couple different things. So that's going to be how we're planning on doing that.
Cool. So your fall plots, so splitting them in half like that, so you pretty much have every option that you have available is there in the field, in every field, right? Correct? Am I following you?
That's the goal. That is what we're shooting for. Go ahead.
So are you do that more for let's say early season, or where does that tend to pay off for you guys the most? Or where do you utilize that the most? You hunt over early season, after frost, late season. I'm guessing probably late season, there's not much left of any of that.
It really depends on the specific location and on the farm. And it also depends on the hunting pressure. You know, it's been an ongoing thing we've learned. But what I'll say is, the food plots we have had good hunting success. We did this last year. We had good success from opening day of archery season into flintlock muzzleloader season.
Okay.
Opening night of archery season, we killed a hitless buck in a food plot. Yep. The rest of the season, there's three of us that mainly hunt this farm I'm talking about. And and I'm talking archery season. And yep. I killed my buck on a separate parcel last year in late October. So two of us were tagged out, and that left the last guy to try to seal the deal. And he hunted his tail off for basically one specific deer and laid eyes on him twice last year and wasn't able to kill him. But that deer he was hunting was daylight in food plots constantly from the beginning to the end of the season. He was just playing a one-man chess match. You know, it's a 250-acre parcel that he was hunting it by himself. And, yep. you know, it's a completely wooded parcel. Everything that's been done to that property as far as food plots have been dozed out individually. Any other habitat improvements have been created. You know, it's a straight normal hardwood forest, and any manipulation in the habitat and growth stage of plants has been, you know, cut back by us. Mm-hmm. So trying to connect all that on a big property has been a big job for us especially. So it was tricky, but basically what I'm getting at is last year we had good success with the food plots until they were browsed off. There's certain locations of the farm that hold a higher percentage of deer, and therefore the browse pressure is worse. I'm gonna separate it to the top and the bottom. It's a mountain that goes up, and he owns some land on the top, and the food plot on top was just down to a putting green by rifle season of last year. Some of the other fields still had rye growing in December into January, and they polished it off sometime in flintlock season.
Okay.
So we did have good success that way. I would love to have said we killed more than one buck last year there. Mm-hmm. We didn't, but I'm still going to consider it a success because we did continue to have daylight activity of deer we wanted to shoot through those few months.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it was a success. The problem we had was the drought. And
right. Yep. Yeah, I think we had a couple of rains out at our farm in August that you did not have. Kind of got ours started off. In fact, some of our brassicas, and I think this is the reason they lasted so long. Some of them I think they got almost a little bit too old. You always run into that risk as well when we plant early like this. I mean, if it keeps raining all the time like it's been, and I'm not complaining about it at all, but you know, if they're, you know, growing away for all of August, all of September, and we have a late frost yet, they're getting pretty old by then, or they can be.
Yeah,
but that's always a risk you take. And then the time you decide to wait till September to plant them, then it's dry in September and they only germinate in, you know, end of September, and you only get 2 or 3 weeks of growth, and then there's barely anything there. So
And I think the thing you got to keep in mind is the deer pressure is so much thing. Like for me, we can plant brassicas now, and yep. Knock on wood, we have never ever run into what you just described of them maturing.
Okay. Yep.
Deer have just annihilated them. And I think it has to do with the property type.
Yeah.
The deer density within that property type. And if I can kind of lay it out, it's a giant, it's a mountain is what it is. It's a mountain. To the south of us, within probably a half mile, is a lot of agriculture, but it's a steep ridge that it holds deer, and they go down to ag at night. But you know, the measly 6 acres of food plots that we're planting do not, it's not enough for the level of deer that's there. So it seems like it doesn't matter what we plant, they annihilate it. Now you, on the other hand, you have a good amount of deer, but you have, you said 8 acres of corn. So, I mean, you've got some food.
Yeah, we do. And we're surrounded by ag pretty much as well. So it's not like we got the only food available for them. So yeah, that plays into it as well, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's always a tricky thing. And I think people often will say about, you know, it's a one size fits all ordeal. And I mean, the more I do this and the more I'm learning, trying to be a steward of this animal and just learn as much as I can, I just don't think that's the case.
Yeah, definitely not. Definitely not. Varies no matter where you go, it seems like.
So let's talk a little bit about plot establishment. So you had planted corn. You have, to your access and in your background knowledge as a farmer, you have a corn planter and a drill to establish anything you want, correct?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
So, yep. You know, unfortunately, I don't have that. And I think a lot of us don't have that, but I mean, is it pretty much a simple game? I mean, you try it, if you're going to plant fall food plots, you're having a field clean, free of weeds, sprayed with Roundup.
And I guess that depends how we're going to plant it. So this fall is going to be different for us. I said we have a corn planter and a drill at our disposal. This fall, we do not have a drill, at least not yet. We had bought another one, and like the way of a lot of other things right now, just is not coming in. So it looks like we're going to be doing it old style, probably do a lot of just broadcasting into the killed thatch and mowing it down on top of the seed, or maybe color packing it, not sure, depending if we can, you know, get it right before rain. Obviously it don't make as big, it's not as big of a deal if it's going to be raining an hour after you spread your seed, but that's probably how we're going to be doing some of it, at least this year, unless we can get a hold of a drill.
Let's talk a little bit more about that, Devon, before we go on to the next thing, because I think what you just said there is a fantastic way to establish a food plot. Everybody thinks they have to have big equipment, till the daylight's out of the soil. And what you said was pretty minimally invasive, but we both have done that and had good success. So you said the thatch. So you're talking a field. You're saying weeds or an old food plot, or what's in that field?
Yeah. So just take, for instance, the field that I mentioned earlier that we had just pushed off this spring and planted rye in it. So that rye now is, you know, 4 or 5 foot tall. It's all headed out. It's turning brown already on its own. It's pretty weedy. We're going to go through that, spray that, kill it. And that there will be the absolute perfect environment to just broadcast seed into. If all them weeds and everything's terminated, you can broadcast your seed in there as long as it can get to the ground. You mow that, whatever's there, the dead weeds, the rye, everything, mow it down on top of that seed. It's like, it's kind of like planting grass and then putting a straw over top of it, really.
Exactly.
Keeps the moisture in there. It's worked really well for us. I don't know that we have ever done any tilling in the fall. We always either do that, or like I said, other years we had access to a no-till drill that obviously works really well, is really good as well, but that certainly can work.
Absolutely. And I one thing I'm going to touch base on that with what you just said, so that method has worked really well for me. The thing I want to air everybody on the caution is, don't try that with large seeds. Don't try that with a soybean. Don't try it with peas. You're going to have a lower success rate unless you've got a ton of rain. You can do it. I think you're better off doing that with smaller seeds like brassicas and cereals.
Yep, you're correct.
But yeah, and what I have found to be what's worked the best for me is in a situation like Devon just said, I will go through and broadcast exactly into that without doing a thing. And a lot of the time I'll bump my seeding rate up a little bit just because it is a broadcast. You're going to have a situation where you might lose some germ. You might have some that just don't make it to the soil. So I've been bumping my seeding rate up from whatever the normal seeding rate is to about 1.25 to 1.5 times. And you got to base that on your experience with that. I would start at least 1.25. And if you see it's a little bit on the lower side, I would bump it up again in the future. But broadcasting into that, coming through with glyphosate, 1 quart per acre of Roundup, and killing that, then you only need to wait an hour. Glyphosate is rain fast before that, and by that time it has moved through the plant because it's systemic. So it's going to move through all those plants. It's going to be dead at the roots. Then you can go through, mow it, cull the packet, do whatever you want to do to cover that seed. And that's what has worked really well for me. And that's similar to the process I think you were just talking about doing.
Yeah, and that's a good point there I forgot to make. But for all these guys that are, you know, maybe they are just making the one-time trip upstate, you can do all of this in one day. You really can. You don't have to wait till this, you know, all your stuff turns brown and dies, like Mitch just said. You can kill it, and an hour later you're good to go pretty much. If it works out for you to do everything one day, it is possible to do that.
We do it all the time. I mean, the food plots that I'm planting are 10 minutes from my house, but trying to juggle a career and family and everything else, I try to do it as efficiently as I possibly can. Number one, I hate tilling soil. It's just not needed. It's not necessary. It's bad for the soil. I'm also on a farm, and I said I'm on a mountain. I'm sitting on very, very thin topsoil. I got to save all I can, and it's not good flat soil either. So you get any kind of rain, it's tilled, it's going to run off. We've done that. I've spent, back before I had any clue what I was doing, not that I have much of a clue now, but back before I had any clue and you know, did as I was told, but before we knew any better, we picked rocks all the time. You till and you pick rocks, you pick rocks, and you pick rocks. And at one point we just said, you know, this picking rocks really stinks.
Yeah, for sure. So I think, you know, whether you're on super rocky ground or just freshly cleared ground, you got, you know, roots in the ground, you got tree stumps, whatever, the less tilling you got to do, the better, in my opinion. If you can get away without it, I mean, there's a place for it, but if you can get away without it, it sure makes life easier.
Exactly. And you know, I'm not anti-tillage, but I just don't feel in most cases it's necessary. And there's people that, you know, they're sitting on 6 feet of topsoil and you can do whatever you want. It really doesn't matter. But what I will say is the majority of people planting food plots are not planting it on very good ground. You've got the cruddy fields left over, or, you know, ground that I described. So I think that establishment of that brassica plot that you talked, or, you know, any small seeded plot, that's a fantastic way. And exactly what you said, if you're going to camp, that's exactly how I would do it. And, you know, mowing it is, I think, important 1 hour after that Roundup application. If you have a cultipacker, I would use the cultipacker. And if you don't have a cultipacker, I've done the redneck cultipacker of cutting a small tree down and dragging it with an ATV.
Yep. That works.
Something to help, you know, flush that seed and get it to that soil, press it down a little bit, you know, as long as it's touching the soil. And as always, it is better to wait for rain and plant a week later than it is to do it, because that's when your best time is.
Right. Yep. All fall stuff is dependent on rain.
That's the name of the game. I mean, we were just talking about corn yields with some of my growers today and what the potential is. And hey, I mean, we know what we have thus far, but to fill grain, we need more rain and we need sunshine. And it's just the start of fall food plots the same.
Yep.
So you're going to be having one thing you said too that I wanted to bring up. You have a clover plot that you said is kind of looking ugly.
We have three different clover plots. The one is probably, it might be 4 years old. It's really not looking bad. But kind of what our plan was this spring was like, well, we're just going to kind of let this one go and we'll probably end up killing it, putting something fall blend in there. That has kind of yet to be determined. Not sure what we're going to do yet.
Yeah. So one thing I wanted to share with anybody, if you have old clover food plots and, you know, they're kind of on that fence of borderline what you want to do with it, what I have found is if you don't fully kill that clover, and let's say, you know, a common thing is you go into a brassica,
right? You know, everybody, everybody wants brassicas, and it's a good thing to rotate. Any clover that is still in that field will easily choke out brassicas. Turnips, radishes, they're not going to do really well if that clover isn't handled. Clover is a perennial, you know, alfalfa perennial, very deep rooted. And if they're not fully dead, they're going to come back quickly, and they have a lot more vigor than those small new seeds of brassicas you just put down. So my recommendation to you is make sure it's dead when you spray that. And go to plant. I speak from my own poor experience of trying that.
Yeah. I have tried that already as well, and you are correct. It does not work.
So I have broadcasted rye into fill places, and that does okay. I think it does okay in certain situations with rain and plus browse pressure. If the clover's kept to a point that, you know, rye will fill in, but it's not necessarily needed. Another thing I wanted to mention too, when you were talking about doing a one-day shop of spreading and planting food plot seed, you know, let's say you're planning on going up the second weekend in August to your place that's 2 hours away, and you're going to do exactly what we just described. Maybe you go up the opening weekend of archery season. You know, archery season opens statewide first weekend in October usually.
Yep.
And there is nothing wrong if you plan a trip up there to bring with you 100 pounds, 150 pounds per acre of rye. And when you get to your food plots on October 1st, overseed them with rye if they are thin, or if you have a system that you just need to thicken up, or even if you have a drought fail. You know, let's say you plant and have a complete drought failure and we don't start getting rains till the end of September. October's not too late to salvage a food plot.
Sure, for sure.
Don't give up. Last year, we reseeded plots September 15th with radishes, and we were broadcasting rye the, I think it was 4 days before season opened in archery season. So that would have been like the last few days of September.
Yep.
By mid-October, you know, we had some good October rains. They actually looked pretty good, and it got us through the season.
Right. Yeah. We did the same thing as well. Some of our stuff that we had just broadcasted into the corn, some of it didn't take as good the first time around. I think it was actually the first weekend of the season. Now, come to think about it, we just seeded a lot of it, and like you said, till beginning of November, man, that looked good.
So trying to think of other situations that people might run into. I feel like the weedy plots are cleaning them up. One thing I'll add in about cleaning clover, if you've planned ahead, I wouldn't do this time of year anymore, but let's say you've got an ugly clover field and you want to put that into a fall plot. Rewind about a month ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, and you wanted to burn that down. You could do a quart to a quart and a half per acre of glyphosate and add a pint of 2,4-D in. Adding a pint of 2,4-D, you know, for certain crops, you can wait 7 days and you can plant. For brassicas, I'd be on the conservative side, and I would go 2 weeks. But adding that 2,4-D in is another mode of action to kill clover and clean the field up. That's been something that I've noted to really help clean a clover field up. For me, I shared with you that I had a fail this spring in planting. And if you go back to our other podcast, we talked about spring plots. All of our food plots this year, we planted in buckwheat and planted a summer cover crop. It would have been planted mid-June. And the buckwheat was there for a couple reasons, you know, soil conservation reasons and soil health reasons. But it was also there because we had originally planned on broadcasting our food plot blend into it, then cultipacking the buckwheat over top of it to cover the seed, and then spray it dead with glyphosate. And it was a fail. And the reason it was a fail, we experimented, and we've learned this the hard way, but you know, sometimes you're just too dumb to to realize that you make the same mistake twice, but we did it on a whole scale. So all the acres, we just did the same thing.
Yeah.
And we left all of the cereal rye that we planted last fall go into heads and mature. And what we did was broadcast our buckwheat right into that rye because it wasn't too thick. We thought we could get away with it and then cover the rye over top of the buckwheat and spray it dead.
Okay.
And unfortunately, what happened, if we would have had more rain, we might have had better success. But if you remember back, beginning to mid, into the, you know, getting toward most of June, I'm going to say, getting towards 4th of July, we were extremely hot and extremely dry.
Yep.
And that really knocked back the buckwheat. And when we started getting rains, it seemed like it was too late. We had poor start and it was thinner than we wanted. And unfortunately, what happened then is we started to get weeds. So one of the successes we had is the rye suppressed a lot of noxious weeds, but it did not suppress certain weeds. And we knew we weren't going to be able to plant peas and soybeans into a thatch of dead rye that had nothing covering the seed.
Right.
So to change gears for us, what we decided to do is I went through, I think a week or a week and a half ago, and sprayed all the fields clean with Roundup. And I added 2,4-D in some because we had mare's tail and mare's tail is not going to die from Roundup. So we added that and got those cleaned and ready. And we are going to, Lord willing, we're going to plan on renting a drill and planting them with the drill this year.
Okay. That'll be interesting to see how that works for you. Is that pretty much the first time you would have used the drill up there?
It's the second time. The first time we used the drill, we had rented one from an outfit, and we had two issues happen. Number one, a lot of what we planted, we established some perennial clover. So we did a fall seeding of clover with the drill, and it was probably in July sometime. And you know how, you know, clovers can just be so agonizing to watch grow because they're slow growing.
Right.
It established well with the clover. And the issue we had was we bought seed from a seed company that I'm not going to mention the name of because I don't think that's right. But it was not Devon seed. It wasn't good Devon seed. But the seed company we bought from, we had a complete failure because some of the food plots that year were planted with a drill. Some of them were planted with our traditional conventional system of doing some tilling, cul-de-packing and such. And, you know, I'm not going to claim that we're the best food plotters in the world, but we're no dummies either. And we had a fail of food plot from seed, and we partly to blame with the, we wanted to blame the drill, but I can't blame the drill. We haven't done a drill since. And it's not because I don't want to. I would love to have a drill, but I've had such a hard time finding one that we can get around the property and it's not going to bang it up and we can actually move it around.
Right. Yeah. So. Yeah. One thing we don't have to worry about. It's pretty easy to get equipment in and out of. So we try to take advantage of that as much as we can.
And I think I want to stress that to anybody listening to this. If you've got the ability to do it that way, if you've got somebody who can help you, you know, maybe your land, you've got a farmer neighbor, or maybe a farmer rents cropland from you. If you can get them to establish plots with a drill, you can conserve on seed costs and you can get yourself started. If you're conventionally tilling at the moment, it can be your gateway into starting with no-till and soil health. And we could do a whole podcast on why you would want to do that. But number one, keep in mind, you could save some seed costs. You could save yourself some time and headaches. And you could be on your way to better food plots, in my honest opinion.
Right.
So one of the funny questions I think I get often, or you have conversations with people at a game dinner or, you know, wherever in deer camp or something, people talk about what's the best food plot. If you had to pick one species, what would you pick? Everybody's is different. D Do you have something in mind, Devon, that sticks out to you like that?
Well, I guess, I mean, I have people ask me the same thing, and I always have to ask, you know, a couple questions. Well, are we talking early season here? Are we talking late season? Is this a plot I can only hunt over one time? Is this, you know, an all-around all-season plot? I don't know that I really have a favorite. I think it varies on the time of year. So we do plant a lot of corn, and that does lend itself well to hunting late season. So, I mean, that is going to be a tough one for me, but, you know, I realize not near everyone has the luxury of being able to plant corn that's going to last into late season like we do. Mm-hmm. That's probably going to be my pick for now.
And you know what? I think the answer you gave is textbook, and it hits the nail on the head, because there is no one size fits all. This is the food plot, because it's whitetails are so diverse. Properties are so diverse. Hunting pressure changes. Cropping rotations change. Forestry practice change. There's so many influences that can affect it that you can't have a one size fits all. I have some plants that I do lean towards a little bit, and I'm going to shed light on them a little bit. For years, we had everything in clover, and clover does great for a lot of things. Clover's great in early archery season. And if you have enough, depending on the type of property you have, it can last for a good length of the season. The problem is, clover is going to go into a dormant mode sometime in November. And once they eat all that leafy growth off of it, it's just not as attractive. So, I mean, the first part of archery season for us used to be fantastic, but it would diminish. And right. I believe we were in a sense of denial for a long time because, you know, we had pictures of deer, or we'd see deer in rifle season, late muzzleloader season, coming out into those fields and digging. And they're digging to eat that clover. They're digging to eat that clover. Well, keep in mind, that's not necessarily means that's the best food plot. That just means that dormant, dead clover, if there is anything left, is actually the best thing available in that area. So there's a bigger problem beyond the food plot.
Yep.
But clover does a great thing. It does provide tonnage, and it is an attractive food source. One thing we learned is you'll have a lot of deer there throughout the entire year. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but I do know that it's typically reduced our tonnage potential going into hunting season, because there's a lot of mouths eating it.
Right.
So yeah, clover is a good one. Soybean is another one that gets a lot of topic. Do you sell a bunch of soybean seed, Devon, or is that not something that's, you know, popular in your area?
Yeah, actually I do a decent amount. I think this year I sold about 25 acres worth, which from a food plot standpoint, that's a lot of seed, you know, from
absolutely
an ag point, 25 acres isn't much, but, and that is something I would like to try at some point. I wish we would have tried it this year, but yeah, with our drill situation, I wasn't really willing to just broadcast expensive soybean seed and hope for the best. But we may actually try that next year instead of corn, just to kind of change it up a little bit. Because I mean, I think nothing is ever totally bulletproof. I think you should try everything once just to make sure it doesn't work better than what you were trying before. But I think it would. There again, soybeans lend itself well to overseeding into as well, which we like to do. Mm-hmm. The case with soybeans is, no matter where you're planting them, you're going to have a lot more summertime browse pressure than you do with corn. So if you can keep ahead of the deer, I think we would be fine. I'm not sure how that would all work out yet. We're just basically have to try it and see.
Yeah. And soybeans, you got to keep in mind, timing of planting is going to have an influence on how palatable that bean is. You know, yep. Beans are going to grow and they're going to be attractive. And if you get a good forage soybean like Devon has at the shop, you know, they're going to be really palatable all the way up until they get a frost. Yep. And when they get that frost, you know, whatever they've determined in bean set and pods, you know, they'll produce that and those deer will eat those pods then. But they'll eat that green vegetative growth. If you get a conventional bean or a different maturing group bean, they have a determined life cycle of when they start to reproduce flowers and when they start to die off. And, you know, there's going to be a point in time where probably in September, if it's an early planted soybean, where they're not going to be attractive. So you're looking at your beans being something that are going to be fed from spring through summer and might not be the greatest attraction throughout most of hunting season. Now, if you have pods and you have a cold winter and you're hunting late season, hey, that's probably one of the most attractive food sources that you can have.
Right.
Yeah. But if you have a situation like that, and that's what you're relying on, you're setting yourself up for the last part of hunting season. You're missing a boatload of potential as far as food plots.
Yeah, unless you get some green in there by but
exactly. So, I mean, soybeans are great. I have nothing against soybeans. I think they're fantastic for deer. They're a fantastic food source. But you got to use, in my opinion, what I'm getting back to is I think you got to use these species in a system. You know, I'm planting soybeans now, end of June, July into August, with the idea that they are going to be green, leafy, succulent. They're going to be eating on them now until they're dead from either over browse or too cold and they die from frost. Yep. So you're using it for the leafy green. I'm not looking to get grain out of this. You know, you talked about that earlier. The property that we're planting food plots on, there's no way I would ever grow corn. I can't. They're going to annihilate it. So I stick with greens. And greens are something that aren't in that area. And I think that's what meets it to a T.
Yeah. That's what works.
Yeah, exactly. So to answer the question of what is the best food plot, I think you need to keep in mind the best food plot is what is the most attractive food source at that particular time.
Yep.
And you have to plan your food plots to reach your goals. My goal is not to have summertime food plots and necessarily have a feeding program for deer, though I have nothing against that. They would just eat me out of house and home. I don't have enough acres and I don't have a deep enough wallet to do that. Yeah. But what my goal is the deer herd that is there, I want to make sure that I have the absolute best food on the property in hunting season, the maximum tonnage and the best diversity food for the beginning, the middle and the end of the season, or at least try to extend it as long as possible, because that's going to give me the best ability to hunt those deer, see them, have a pattern of use in those fields, and ultimately have a say in what deer get shot and potentially what deer get passed on, because they're spending daylight hours on that property.
All right. Yeah. So,
I think that's enough ranting and raving about food plots for now. What do you think?
Yeah, I think we covered it pretty well. Yeah, I'm excited to see how this fall goes. Basically, like we touched on it, fall plots especially are really dependent on the weather. So, yeah, it remains to be seen. But, yeah, I think we got enough info out there. If somebody still has questions, I'm sure they can reach out to somebody that knows the answer, but I think it's a good starting point.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm going to throw this out there, reach out to Devon. You know, Devon's got a lot of experience with food plotting. He's a farmer, he's selling seed, you know, reach out to Little Mountain Outfitters and chat with him, get a hold of us. We do have a Facebook page. We do have an Instagram. Now blame me. It's not very well kept. But if you look up PA Woodsman podcast, you are going to find us. And if you send something to us, we will eventually get back to you. It will happen. But, you know, post a comment, you know, ask a question, give Devon a call. And, you know, we'd love to help you.
That's exactly right.
So I'm going to leave you with this. If you have private land and you are not planting food plots, you could do just as good if you went and found a good piece of public land and hunted that.
There you go.
If you are not planting food plots, you are missing out, because they are so critical if you are trying to hunt a good deer. And Devon and I are. We're trying to shoot the best buck we can.
Yep.
So whether it's on private or whether it's on one of your public pieces or one of the pieces I'm hunting, I don't really care. But this is part of the fun. This is part of the part of the joy of the outdoors and being a woodsman, right?
That's exactly right.
Sure. Well, hey, until next time, good luck with planting, Devon, and hopefully all goes well. Lord willing, we get some good rains, and hopefully we're tuned in and ready to go for archery season.
That's exactly right. Sounds good.
Thanks, pal. You take care.
Yep. Likewise.
See you.